University of Lozano. So after this speech, we will have a short break, and afterwards we are, by the program, we're supposed to have Mr. Bernard Hellman from the Ministry of Education, but unfortunately he won't be able to join us, so he has asked me to read his presentation, so I will just read the presentation, and afterwards there's another break, as you know. That's the last keynote speech. So, Professor Suki.
Okay, so, okay, so thanks a lot for the introduction, and thanks for inviting me here to share with you some experience we had with a project called COSPRA and about the introduction to open office. Actually, the full name of my university is the University of Bolzano Bozen, because as here we are bilingual, actually trilingual, so we always want to keep this very clear in our mind. Okay. So, next slide, please. Next slide. There is some mechanism which is not working. Next slide. Okay. So, let me start with some ads, you know. So, what is COSPRA? COSPRA is a wonderful project which is funded by the EU, where there are four research institutions, eight public European administration, and two industry organizations. It is, as you can see here down on the map, it is spread around Europe, and the idea of COSPRA is to try to evaluate whether the introduction of openoffice.org and the introduction of Linux can produce savings or not savings in some representative European PA. This is why we have such a large project. It is a strat that still involves several partners, and the goal of this is to have enough public administration to give some sample representativeness of the European public administration to attract more public administration via the Observer program, which is a program where public administration can participate in the project, no cost on their side, no cost on our side, and sharing the documentation. And we had even some subcontracting where some public administration committed to do migration and letting us observing the data which we were collecting on the migration. Next slide, please. So the key idea of a project is to analyze open data standard and open source and determine what is the knowledge required, what is the cost required to do the transition, and define viable path towards successful transition. Often we talk about open source, but as the project progresses more, we think that the key issue is not the open sourceness of a project, while it's rather the open data standards, which means the possibility of creating an environment where new stakeholders can enter with very low entry barriers. Because we all know that some proprietary corporation, which we don't name to be politically correct, use incompatibility as the major vehicle to prevent people from moving to our systems, to other systems. And so our project tried to study not only what are the available open source products, how we can migrate, but also what are the possibility to overcome the problem of lack of common data standards. Next slide. And this is why the core of our project is in the definition of the so-called total cost of ownership and the return on investment in public administration. Now, clearly, when evaluating the cost of moving to, say, openoffice.org, would not be fair to simply discount the cost of a license and not take into account that a migration causes several other costs, including the training of the personnel, including the changing of some proprietary applications which are running or which are compatible with the old system, and all these facts are clearly emphasized by most proprietary organizations, which claim that moving to open source is very expensive, and this is why we have devoted several resources of our project in trying to define a clear way to model, to approximate, because clearly it is impossible to give a precise definition, what is the cost of ownership, the global cost of ownership of a solution. Clearly, among the cost of ownership of a solution, we should not include only the technical or the personnel stuff. There are many other aspects which are to be added, and I will talk about this just at the end of the presentation. So, we run pilot project in the Department of Public Administration to introduce open source. We try to do a cost-benefit analysis, and we collect data via a system which is called PROM. PROM is a facial metric. It's a suite that we have developed at the Free University of Bolzano-Bozen, where we can measure the effort spent on each individual document where people are working. So in a sense, this can be perceived as a big brother by the people, because this traces all the applications that people do. But clearly, we have made it absolutely anonymous. We have committed to the employee using the system and translating that we will never reveal the data back to their administrators. And also, we have decided not to use it when the number of people who were taking part in the experimentation were less than 10, because in such case, some other study of the profile could have been a way to identify the people who were doing. But the key aspect is that we are able to determine how much time is spent per document, and more simply, how many documents have been opened, have been closed, and also what is the lifetime of a document, how much time it takes for a document to be produced, and also the level of which documents get reused. So, you know, the reuse of a document, in addition of being a very nice feature, because allow us to reduce the time, is also a way by which I increase the lockability of the document. Because each time I open a document and then I add feature, I clearly lock more the document onto a given existing solution. Not always companies exploit this. As you all know, documents written in Word 95 can be hardly opened by Word 2003 and can be simply opened by OpenOffice. But this is what people sometimes do not realize. Okay, next slide. So the model of the total cost of ownership was a concept introduced by Gartner Group in 1987. It has been widely applied, and there are some recent studies on trying to compare, for instance, Linux and Windows. This Yankee Group report, for instance, was not particularly positive toward Linux, but again, total cost of ownership is a model, so it depends heavily on what are the elements which are taken into account, and our effort was to try to take into account a comprehensive aspect of the elements. Also, this Yankee Group report on Linux and Windows was using a fairly linear model, and we also object to the use of a linear model, because not always our decisions are taken by linear model, linear summation of variables. Just to give you an example, if you want to buy an ice cream and there is a probability over a million that the ice cream has been produced with eggs coming from an area where there is this, you know, this chicken disease, even though the probability is extremely low, you may decide not to get it at all, so you may decide for a Boolean answer, not for a linear answer, because you do not want to take any risk. So people in decision theory have developed much more refined model based on minimization, maximization of risk, or also a hard developed model based on fuzzy logic. I don't go into the detail. If you're interested, send me an email and I can send you back the document. We have developed a decision model based also into this aspect, which we consider fundamental for a safe and a clear definition of the cost of ownership. Next slide. So, okay, so we have a model of the cost of ownership. Is this enough to compare different solutions, and we thought it was not yet enough. We had to add a way to measure and to define statistics over measures. I'm an engineer, so I tend to be a technical person, and I remember that there was a politician called Disraeli who said that there were three kinds of lies given by politicians. There were lies, there were dumb lies, and then there were statistics. Because, you know, with statistics you can really play everything in the way you want. And so what we have done is we have developed a system called GQM, the goal question metric, which is a fundamental approach to model elements in statistics, invented by Vic Basili. And in this model we can organize each statistical question based on the goal of what we want to achieve, running down the equation and then computing the metrics which are associated with this equation. So all the data which is collected is not simply thrown into some sort of model, but it is interpreted via this paradigm called GQM, and then it is used to compute the total cost of ownership of a solution. Next slide. Now, the process has been ongoing for about 3 semesters, so 1.5 years. I can tell you yet that we do not have yet a clear definition of the total cost of ownership of the system. What we have are only some preliminary indication based on some local experimentation. So we have not yet put all the data together. And our early results are based on a definition of a catalog of existing open source software and open data standard for personal productivity, which will be released by the 15th of October. So if you're interested, you can go there and download it. By a collection of the business processes of partner public administration, by a definition of a software requirement for partner administration, and of a definition of a framework for the evaluation of the transition. Let me just say a word on the second bullet. A tool should not be the way organizations are organized or structured. A tool should be an aid for people who are structured to improve their business process. The business process should be driven by the business goal, and the business goal should be organized individually in individual workflows, and then the tool should help people to enact the workflows as part of the business process to achieve the business goal of the organization. So we cannot forget this when we propose the migration, because otherwise we may propose migration which are optimal on one point, but there are overall suboptimal. And this is why in COSPA we also spent a pretty large amount of time in studying what are the business goals of public administration, which are not very easy to collect, because some public administration have never heard of business goals or whatever, and simply do what tradition tells them to do. And then we have tried to recollect what are the business processes which are present inside of the organization. How they, for instance, issue an identity card, how they issue a passport, how they give the permission to build a house. All these are the key business processes for most organizations, and we have studied how our tool could help them overall to solve this kind of business goals. Sometimes finding that actually the usage of a proprietary solution was totally useless because such specific business process did not require the tool. It was the availability of the tool which led people thinking that they needed the tool to achieve some result. But by itself, the tool was useless. I guess most of us know this. And also most of us knows that the power of people in public administration is based on the amount of money they have to spend. It is very difficult to tell to a manager of a technical part of a township or of a province to cut the budget because it's buying open source, because the cutting of the budget creates in him a feeling that he becomes less powerful in the organization. Because power is measured not only by salary, but it's also measured by available money to spend. And these are all facts that when studying the transition, we clearly cannot ignore. Okay, next slide. So, as I mentioned, we had 2 phases of the project. One was the transition to OpenOffice.org on Windows environment. Right now we have 3,600 installation of OpenOffice with our data collection tool from. So we have a really large amount of data based on which we hope to derive pretty reliable results. And what we do is we also have a pre-test, post-test evaluation of the users, because not only we want to measure the productivity in terms of time spent, but we also want to measure the productivity in terms of the perception of the user, because the perception of the user has a strong impact in how the long-term productivity will be done. And then we have a second section, which is moving on Linux, which has been starting yet, and you know better than me that transitioning to OpenOffice is one thing, transitioning to Linux is a much more complex activity because it requires a heavy interface with legacy systems which are present. Next slide. So now I will present a few case studies of how OpenOffice has been introduced in a partner organization, in a subcontracting organization, which actually are very nearby myself, which is the Association of the Township of South Tyrol and the overall province of South Tyrol. So let me tell you in advance a little bit of the overall organization. In South Tyrol, South Tyrol is a region of province of Italy with the largest number of township per person. So that it is very, very much spread. And all the township, apart from the two major cities, which are called Bolzano Bozen and Merano Meran, all of the other places are associated in this organization, which works like a private organization. And this organization has pioneered the introduction of open source. So they started, and through the project, they did installation, partial installation or total installation of OpenOffice. By partial installation, we mean installation where they introduce OpenOffice only on few PCs, not on all PCs, because there was a resistance of the internal personnel. For total installation, they introduced the OpenOffice on all the PCs. I can also tell you that the motivation they used to introduce OpenOffice was the claim that if they did not introduce OpenOffice, they would have had to pay the license fee for Office. As I mentioned before, sometimes this does not appear to be a very convincing organization, and we see the result. Next slide, please. So, at May 2005, what we have done is that in these 113 municipalities, overall, there has been a pretty... You see, it's very easy for you to read, I guess, the name of the municipalities. This is due to privacy regulation, I'm kidding. So you see the municipalities on the left and the name of their servers. And then after the introduction, how many of them are still using Word document and how many of them are using OpenOffice? Why we keep the two tools? We have done a pre-trial and we have found that taking away Office and inserting OpenOffice is a wrong step because people felt lost. Actually, the only municipality where people wanted to absolutely not use any more OpenOffice was a municipality where they introduced OpenOffice and wiped out Office. So you will always see the two systems coexisting. And we have a fairly good number of cases where after 1 month, very early in the experimentation, people were all using, you see, or mostly using, the percentages there, files which were in SXW format. In addition to this, some of them are using OpenOffice to open doc files, because in this way they keep the format the same as before, so they have no problem in sending documents around, but they use the new interface. Next slide. A second major case study that we have done was a controlled case study on a group of people working for the province of South Tyrol. They started with a controlled experiment where 22 people were divided in two groups, one transitioning to open source and the other non-transitioning to open source. They were randomly divided in two groups and they kept on doing very regular work, so we did not interfere with their regular businesses. And just for your curiosity, this openoffice.org is now installed on more than 3,000 clients in this. We haven't added to the number I showed you before because it is not yet completed the installation. And we organized it with a phase of training at the beginning, then a constant hotline support in case of problem, and a constant monitoring of the usage of the Office tool via our prompt tool. Next slide. So what did it happen? You see here that there are two bars. In the white or blue, there is a percentage of opened files using OpenOffice, and in the reddish one, there is the time spent using OpenOffice. So you see that there are actually two very well-defined patterns. One pattern is at the very beginning, where we simply introduced OpenOffice. So people initially had enthusiasm for the new tool, but then network externality, colleagues using still Office or whatever, forced them to go down. And in week 18 of the experimentation, well, week 18 was middle of August, so Italy, everything is closed. But still, you know, at the beginning of September 22-23, 21-22, there was still a fairly low number of people who were using OpenOffice. And then there was, between week 22 and week 23, a move where we introduced the automatic startup of OpenOffice clicking on doc documents and of Calc clicking on Excel documents. So what happened is clearly we left OpenOffice Office present on the machine. But by double-clicking a Word document, not Word was open, but was open OpenOffice. So we had a way to, you know, ease the use of the tool. And in fact, the number of documents which started being used with OpenOffice and with Calc increased dramatically. So that at the end of the experimentation, overall, 22-23% of the documents and the time spent of documents was devoted on OpenOffice. Notice there was no pressure to use OpenOffice versus Office, so there was no political saying you use OpenOffice, you do not use any more Office. So people did exactly what they wanted, and also people were instructed on how to revert the automatic startup. So we clearly told people that if they did not want any more to have an automatic startup of Word, of OpenOffice Writer instead of Word, they could have simply gone there and doing tap, tap, tap in order to get Word started up. So we played very, very safe, and still we got this major result. Next slide. Oh, now, in addition, we wanted to study what, so we can say, overall, there was a reasonable return on this experimentation. Without any particular force, people naturally got to use OpenOffice, even though they lived in an environment where most documents were Office documents, and most people wrote this document using Office, and we know that there are known problems of incompatibility with the headers and blah, 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 blah. So this was one result. It's not shown here, but we also study the individual productivity of the people. And we measure the individual productivity by the time spent on the average per document and the number of documents produced. We didn't have any other measure. We found that actually there was no statistically significant difference between the group who transitioned to OpenOffice and the group who remained using. So in this specific case, apart from the additional cost of training we had at the beginning and the online support which was given for OpenOffice, which by the way is given anyway for Office, there was no difference. We also asked people how they felt, because clearly the feeling, as we said, is an important aspect because it's a major driver. And so we noticed that actually at the end of the experimentation, people were not more happy about open source. So we did not create a group of fun going there and promoting open source. We found people much more knowledgeable of what we were doing. So you notice here we had question A, are you familiar with the expression free open source? At the beginning there were about half of the people who didn't know what it was. At the end, people felt either very familiar or fairly familiar. There was no other possibility. Next slide. The second question was a perception about OpenOffice. At the beginning, there was no negative perception. They were all feeling positive, you know, like talking about alternative energy or about, you know, new age, these things which look very, very fuzzy in mind and get, you know, people all very happy because they don't know what they are talking about. And at the end, we found that actually we created some negative people. Most of people had a positive, and actually group C would be very positive. It's not neutral, there is a mistake there on the slide. And there was a reduced number of people who are very positive. So overall, I think this was a good result because we made people aware of the pros and the cons of a tool, which is a good starting point to do a migration. Next slide. Now, then here we asked people the importance of the application they used and whether it is important to know it very well. And again, at the beginning they thought it was given that they knew it, so they didn't rank it as very important, it was just important or quite important. At the end, they all felt it is very important. So in this case, we interpreted again positive, because we made people thinking of what we were using, and we made people thinking at the key importance of training. All these people were already well trained using Office, because all they then had courses and years of experience in using Office. Now they moved to a new tool and they felt, well, initially they didn't think that training was relevant, now they felt training was relevant. Next slide. Here we asked, are you ready or are you reluctant to give up your existing application for using an OSS alternative? And notice that at the beginning people were mainly neutral, and then at the end people started being more reluctant. Again, I consider this very positive, because we made people thinking that the key issue of open source is not just to save money for licenses, which is actually, in my perception, the wrong way to go open source, but it is a starting of a transition which requires effort and which requires a good knowledge of what we are doing, which is actually, I think, a very positive aspect of open source. Next slide. Then we asked about the motivation. So initially people were fairly, you know, fairly Taliban, fairly theology, fairly strict in their ideas. They were mainly believed to have the right support to OSS initiative, while at the end we found that there were people who frankly said, well, you know, as of now, as of this experience, I really think it's better to stay with what I have right now. I don't want to take the risk of transition. Next slide. So, what was the attitude change that we had? Clearly, all the people knew better the term. Sorry, I'm going. I have 3 more minutes if I can.
Yeah.
I was scheduled for half an hour. I'm at 9:31. Is it okay? Okay. I guess it is okay because no one said no. And obviously, all the users know the term open source after the experimentation. Users now see OSS as either positive or negative. We have less neutral opinion. They give more importance to the fact that the application is well known, and the user remain open to the transition to OSS. And from additional question, the user migrated to OSS and gave more importance to the training, as we said. Next slide. And now what we did in Pisa was a third case study in trying to study what was the average of documents of people moving to open source solution. And also in PISA, the next slide, In general, we found that we reached, without any policy, a level of usage of open office of about 20 to 30%. And in the current environment, we found that it is difficult to get a higher usage unless there is a clear political sign. We tried to convince the president of the province of Pisa to come and to use open office publicly, but he didn't want to do it. But anyway, from what we have seen, it is necessary, in order to make migration, to study the migration overall and to put the usage of open office, as it should be, as a step toward a global migration, as a step to solve the requirement, and not as a theological decision. And this, I think, gave us a fairly confident way to model the cost of ownership, which was our initial question on open source. Clearly, I think there are issues that the society at large should address when making the transition of open source. Issues which go beyond the fact that open source is open source. Because we all know that open source is free, we all know that open source let you look inside the code, but clearly open source introduces a completely different level of managing the map. So open source, in a sense, it is disruptive, is a disruptive technology, even though it's not so new. It's a disruptive technology because it alters significantly the way by which businesses are organized. And open source is not just one thing, but you know, there are very similar movements dealing with drugs, with generics, or with a fair trade commerce. I don't know if anyone of you has heard of a fair trade commerce. Have anyone? Just one. It's very hot in Italy, but it's not so hot outside, which is this commerce where we buy things directly from the producer. It costs a little bit more, but we avoid buying elements from multinationals. So, anyway, and overall, we think that thinking at a different model by which people interact can actually resolve some of the element of our society, which is has the so-called digital divide. So we came to the conclusion that open office and the migration to open source not only had the power of making a transition which was effective, was cheap, was better people-oriented, was more European than American. But was also a way to introduce a different thinking on what is the overall economy of a society and how you can grow the society through the economy. Buying a specific tool is not a politically unaware decision. For me, buying an apple which comes from farmers which produced it and didn't go through multinational, we slaved them, rather than buying the same apple from a big chain, make a difference, like buying a t-shirt or buying a soccer ball for the same. And so it should become a way of thinking about open source. Next slide. Next slide. So, overall, we found some resistance, we identify a brute force, we thought that the conversion of the documents required time, we had problem with compatibility, but we also thought that overall some concepts were not easily learned, but can produce a lasting change, also a lasting change in which our overall business is being run. Next slide. And so the question for you is, should all the products judged in terms of their performances, or also by the process used to develop them? And note, I'm not advocating lousy products. I'm not telling that we should go back to the old communist way where you were buying lousy products among yourselves just because they were produced by yourself. The question is, if I have two products which are almost equivalent, can I give a preference to a product because it used a different, more human-centric approach rather than a product which used a totally different approach? And personally, I think so. Now you can say, is it possible to change the way of thinking of people? And now I want to give you some personal experience I had of that. Next slide. Okay. How many of you are from Capodistria here? Okay. You know what is this? Come on. Anyone else from Capodistria? Come on, you are from Capodistria. No. This was actually the house of my mom, not my grandparents, which was in Capodistria. And this is how I got in touch with Davide Dozza. You know, he told me, we had a chat because he sent me an email. I said, well, you know, but I'm really interested in Capodistria because this is where my parents live. And, you know, there was a time in life where people said that the war was a solution of all political games. And this house was torn down and my parents had to run away from Capodistria. They felt it was very good for me to come back here. You know, it's the first time that I'm publicly invited in Capodistria to talk about these things. Because we think now that political issues can be organized in a different way. So we came to this consideration after 50, 60 years of World War II. And this was not obvious before. If you go to the next slide. Anyone knows what is this? Come on, professor, Italian professor in first line. What is this? No. This is not Istria. No. This is Caporetto. What is Caporetto? In Slovenia, that's good. Most people don't know that Caporetto is in Slovenia. I mean, Caporetto was a major battle in World War I. You know how many people died? In Caporetto, 600,000 people. In that place, 600,000 people died for this thing. And the ironical aspect of this is that the fight was between Austria and Italy. And now Caporetto is Slovenia. So there were 600,000 people who died for nothing, really for nothing. And the other aspect is that there were poets, Italian poets, German poets, French poets, who were saying that the war is a way to clean the society, if you have ever heard of futurismo. And so at that time, people really thought that the war was good and that via battle we could clean up and improve our society. Now we think that all these people are totally crazy. And so my hope is that via open source and via movement toward open source, we will also be able to change the attitude not only toward wars, but also toward the way in which business has been done. Next slide. End of the presentation. If you have any question, I'm ready to answer. Yes, please.
What is the next timeline? And you said you're just starting the rollout tech phase 2 for OpenOps on Linux. And so can you tell us about the future of the project plan?
Yes, so the project was initially conceived as a 3-year project and then was forced by the commission to become a 2-year. And now we are asking for an extension. So I expect to have by December the complete data about the OpenOffice under Windows transition so that we will be able to release and to give some guidance on how to migrate. And I hope to have in about next year at this time the same things also for Linux. But it's very difficult. We are finding extreme resistance for the transition to Linux because transitioning to Linux requires a complete rethinking of all the applications we have been done. Actually, an interesting aspect we found is that in most places, Word document, we scanned all the documents present in the public administration with Hercules. And the presence of macros or call to external tool, which is usually marketed as a way not to move to open source. They say you cannot move because your macro won't work, or you cannot move because you have calls to external tools. This present is almost irrelevant in OpenOffice. So the lock-ins are really minimal, but in Linux, it's a totally different business. Also, there is a key question, is what Linux? Because Linux is not Linux. There are bazillion number of different Linuxes, and unfortunately the community is very divided. So, other questions? Okay. If there are no, yes, please.
disclosure, I should probably introduce myself. My name is Stephen Freeman, I'm the chief
technical officer. No, sorry, in the interest?
Full disclosure.
Okay.
My name is Stephen Freeman, I'm a technology officer for Microsoft. So I was very interested in thank you for your presentation.
Yeah, and they can say that Microsoft is always claiming that it will completely give out, sorry, I shouldn't say Microsoft, big corporation always claim that they will give out the complete source code and the complete definition of their data standard. But we all know that a very simple marquee detail can completely alter the way in which things work. And the Germans say, the demon is in the details.
So that was really my comment. I have a couple of comments. On the topic of open document formats, I think you were factually incorrect in two of your statements, and I would welcome the opportunity to engage with you to help you to get those points correct in the next presentation.
Okay, thank you. Just send an email.
Specifically, your comments about Microsoft's attempts to close the document format, where it's fully open.
No, sorry. Sorry, no, wait a second. No, to be honest.
Hang on, let me comment.
Okay.
The European Union found that Microsoft document formats were sufficiently open to meet European corporate procurement requirements. I think that in the presentation you made, the point became quite clear that really what you're talking about seems to be motivated by some form of anti-corporate or anti-American. And I think, do you realize that the moment some are both
well, first of all, I have to say I'm a proud European, you know, and I please want everyone who don't feel proud European to raise their hand. No, I'm proud European, and I think as European I should promote the European industry. This for me is a paramount importance, you know. This is the second. I'm not anti-American personally. I studied in U.S. I found a wonderful place there. I worked for 1 year in US and 4 years in Canada, and I'm even in favor of Bush, so I'm not a left-wing person, but, you know, I find completely ridiculous claiming that I'm anti-American. I'm very much in favor of America, and there are lots of people in US who are in favor of open source. I mean, this, no, sorry, this is my time to talk. And, sorry, that's my time to talk. Yeah, I'm Catholic, I'm Christian, and I like the fact that people should be treated as human beings and not as slaves. You know, actually, we eliminated the slavery in the 16th century. The slavery was eliminated by the US in the 19th century. Well, that's good. You know, we don't have death penalty. The death penalty was abolished in 1755 by Peter Leopold II, Great Duke of Tuscany, and George W. Bush put to death 125 people, which is 5 times the people put to death by Mussolini. So, I mean, we can talk about this, and I'm clearly not anti-American to say that I'm human. I know human rights are very positive in America, but perhaps we can talk about this later. Now, going back about the openness of Microsoft documents, the new version of Microsoft documents, of documents of Office 2003, are actually somewhat open and have been declared proper, not the previous versions. And also there is a European legislation issue, recommendation issued in 1991, which says that European any company in Europe, I mean any member of the EU, should enforce a regulation where we can do reverse engineering of data and of applications, provided that it is necessary for interoperability. Despite this, if you look at most Microsoft licenses, since you are for Microsoft, so I can say it explicitly, say that they don't want this. Clearly, their claim is unsupported by the law, because clearly, where the law is in place, any other claim is void. But my question is, since we have a law which clearly says that we can do reverse engineering on tools to support interoperability, why do you write down statements which are contradictory with the law that we have in place? Then, again, I'm not anti-Microsoft. If we have to look at the big corporation, IBM is much larger than Microsoft. I have Windows installed on my machine because I have been not managed yet to find a good substitute for Outlook. I'm not anti-Microsoft. Are you proposing a substitute for my for Outlook?
No.
Okay, that's good.
And the cost of that. So okay. Trying to make sure that some of the more inflammatory state. Because I have no objection to the, I think it's a good presentation. It's
just thank you, I'm used to it.
Some of the things you said about Microsoft.
I didn't say anything about Microsoft. Sorry, I avoided Microsoft on all my presentation. Okay, good. Thank you very much for the fun.